Weird way to start a sermon, but I did not sleep well last night. You know when you have a flight to catch or somewhere to be really, really early and you keep waking up because you're afraid your alarm's not going to go off? Don't you hate that? I hate that. Yeah. So you wake up every hour in a panic that you overslept. And that happened to me last night. But I'm not flying anywhere until tomorrow. So I don't know what was going on. But I woke up with that weird sensation that I'd been asleep for like 10 hours, but I'd only been asleep for like 45 minutes to an hour. And it kept opening over and over again, right? Making sure the alarm's on. Go back, pray, fall back asleep. Tomorrow I fly to Tennessee, and then we drive to Cleveland, Ohio. My aunt passed away this week, precious saint of the Lord. Many, many hardships in life. She trusted him to the end. Possibly one of the greatest laughs on planet Earth that will be missed. I'm sure at some point tomorrow I will hear a child say, "Are we almost there?" Might even hear me say it at some point. But that's what struck me this morning. There are two things in life that are mysterious in their measurement, miles and minutes, right? Two things that it's hard to understand progress in, minutes and miles, time and travel. Sometimes they fly by, and sometimes they creep by. Which brings me to a very prominent word in our text this morning in 2 John. If you can't find 2 John, it's right after 1 John. And it's right before 3 John. Thank you very much. It's only a half a page, so I understand if you skip it. But locate that if you have a Bible. A prominent word here this morning, over and over again in Scripture, is the word walk. And the word walk describes our life with each other and our life with Christ. The Bible uses the word path. The Bible uses the word way. Bible uses the word walk over and over again. And even in the very early church, you see in the book of Acts that the church, the gathered church, and these people called Christians, followers of Christ, were called followers of the way. And of course, Jesus and his disciples walked everywhere. I don't imagine any of the disciples ever said, "Are we there yet?" I don't imagine Jesus saying, "Don't make me come back there," right? But they moved through life at a much, much slower pace. Miles and minutes were understood in an entirely different fashion than they are now. And discipleship is a walk. And it's slow, and it's time-consuming. And we've talked a lot about walking here at Creekside. See the tree out there? That's from Colossians 2, 6 and 7, where Paul says that the way you started in Christ is the way you should continue to walk with Christ. You start by faith, you walk by faith. And we say, I used to say these four things a lot. I'm going to be repeating them again. The four principles of the walk, you've heard me say, you can only start where you are. You can't start where somebody else is. You start where you are. The only walk you can walk is yours. You can't walk someone else's walk for them. The only step you can take is the next one. You can't take a step. You can't skip the next step. And you can't take somebody else's step. The only step you can take, the next one. And number four, none of us are there yet. And so we finished 1 John last week. This morning we're doing 2 John. I told you last week Alan would be here this morning. Alan will be here next week so that I can fly out and be gone. But this morning, a really, really good insight, I think, for the walk. Because we think about taking steps, and we think about where we are and what the next step might be in our life. I believe this morning we have, you could consider these maybe markers on the path to make sure you're on the right path, or maybe a way of walking, maybe the kind of footsteps you leave behind, what will they say? A way maybe this morning for you to consider what your next step might be. And he does this with two words he talked about a lot in 1 John, used them time and time again, truth and love. If you can imagine having those written on your feet, truth, love, truth, love, truth, love. Only this morning there's going to be a bit of a plot twist. So let's look at 2 John, a little bitty short letter. John didn't write with verses, but there's only 13 of them. Fits on half a page in my Bible. And it starts with, "The elder to the elect lady and her children. Well, that's strange. What is this? Is the elder his title, his position, or is he just acknowledging, I'm old now, I'm like a father to you? We saw this time and again in 1 John, my beloved children. And is this an individual and her kids, or is it most likely the church and the people of the church? Because if you get to the end, the children of your elect sister greet you. This probably isn't their nieces and nephews. This is probably another church sending their greetings to them. So kind of a humble way, I think, for John to present himself, and a way for them to respect him as an elder. It's like him saying, you're old man, right? And he says, I love you in truth. Or I truly love you. Or I love you according to truth. And not only I, but also all who know the truth. So in other words, word has gotten out to other churches, and we're starting to hear about each other, and other churches see what's happening here, and they love this. Because of the truth that abides in us, or among us, and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, in truth and love. So he offers this greeting, which will be important. We'll come back to it in a minute. Offers a greeting, hello, grace, mercy, and peace with us. But he starts out just with truth and love, and it will be with us forever. There will never be a time when we'll outgrow truth. There will never be a time when we will not rejoice in truth, and when truth will not be with us. Truth isn't something we create. We don't have my truth and your truth. Truth is revealed from God, and because we will be with God, we will be with truth forever. And then it seems, the way I kind of put this together, especially if you have like a paraphrase, verse 4, I rejoiced greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. So it could have been that what he's saying here is that I was out in my travels, and I came across some people from church. And guess what they were doing? They were walking in the truth. They hadn't abandoned the truth. And we're going to see in a minute, this had been a problem. If you're here for 1 John, that had been a problem. But I rejoiced. I rejoiced greatly to find that you're walking in the truth just as you were commanded by the Father. And we talked about in 1 John how we should have just as much joy in the obedience of a fellow believer as we have in our own obedience. And that's what John is showing here. And now I ask you, dear lady, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. If you've been around for 1 John, how many times have we heard this now? Love one another, love one another. This isn't anything new, but it is new. It's old, but it's new. Jesus did this in the upper room. This is the new commandment. If you just love each other, if you love me, you'll obey. It all ties together. But do you see what he's saying here? From the beginning of your church, dear lady, this has been a core value, if you will. This church was founded on people loving each other. And I'm going to ask you, dear lady, I want to remind you of that. Keep loving one another. And what is love? Verse 6, that we walk according to his commandments. So do you see the circle here? Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. But in keeping my commandments, you will love one another. And it may even be that the most loving thing you can do for each other is to obey God. What do you need from me? What do you need from your family members? What do we need from each other? We need each other to be walking in truth and love and walking in obedience. So you see the circle he's drawing here. Just as we heard, you have heard from the beginning, so you should what? Walk in it. Okay, so there's the command. Walk in truth. Walk in love. They go hand in hand was known from the first days of the church. It's known now, and I'm reminding you of it, and that's what you should be known for. When word goes out about the church, it should be known that it's a place of truth and love. And then look at verse 7. Here's the twist. It starts with the word for. In other words, I have a reason for telling you this. This has all been a reminder up to this point, just a reminder. I have a reason for telling you this. For many deceivers have gone out into the world. Those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Such a one is the deceiver and an antichrist, or the antichrist. Watch yourselves so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever abides in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. So there's a reason I remind you of this, church. And he talked about this several times back in 1 John. Many deceivers, many deceitful people, many false teachers have gone out into the world. So what he seems to be saying, they got their start in the church. Do you remember what he said back in 1 John? They were among us, but they went out from us, and by staying out from among us and continuing to teach this, they proved that they're not really of us, and so he's having to teach them. He called them anti-Christ because they were anti-truth. They are deceivers, twice he says. And it's interesting what the primary point of their deception was. Do you see it there in verse 7? Those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. So this was a big point that we saw. There were these false teachers. They were teaching that several elements of this, but that Jesus wasn't properly the Son of God in the flesh. As a matter of fact, they may have even been teaching that Jesus wasn't even the Christ until he was baptized, and the Holy Spirit is the Christ. And so he became the Christ at his baptism, and he stopped being the Christ before he died. So he was kind of the Christ in the middle there. But the Son of God in the flesh? No. I mean, how would God sully himself with a body? How would God sully himself by taking on himself incarnation? If you go to the Mexican restaurant, what do you order? Carne. What is that? That's meat. It's a theological word. Incarnation. Jesus took on meat. He took on flesh, right? He took on a body. Is that important? I mean, what if he was just a ghost walking around? Right? Well, if he's not a person, how is he going to be a sacrifice in our place? His death is a big deal. How is he going to live a life for us? How is he going to be a priest if he has not been through what we go through? Right? So this is key. Important document, a doctrine here about Jesus Christ. And these people were deceiving people about Jesus. And he calls them antichrist, small a. Because they're anti-truth, they're anti-Christ. And this is what he says. These people are coming to you, and I want you to watch yourselves because we worked hard to get you here. And if you lose what we've worked for, you're going to lose reward. Now, there's all of our work that we put to get us here. It's just going to be lost, and the heavenly reward that goes with it. And look how he describes this in verse 9. Is this not so familiar? Everyone who goes on ahead. Isn't that what false teaching ever always is? Right? I've outgrown the faith. I've grown past what I learned before. I've gone ahead. Right? And John says, well, just understand that if you go ahead, you're leaving Jesus behind. You're leaving God behind because God is in the truth. You see, what John's saying is, we grow in the truth, but we never grow beyond the truth. See that? We grow as the truth gets in us and gets a hold of us and transforms us, and as God opens our eyes to truth, and Jesus says, the truth will set you free. So we grow in truth, But he's saying there are some people here who believe they've been set free by going beyond the truth. And he says, if you go beyond that, you're going to lose everything we worked for, and you're going to find that God is not in that. God is not the one taking you there. That's you taking you there, and you are being deceived. Abide in the teaching. This is very important. I'm going to stop right here, because let's rewind here, right? I want to remind you, walk in truth, walk in love, walk in truth, walk in love. Why? Because there's deceivers who are going to lie about Jesus, and they're going to draw you away from truth and love. So what do they need? They need each other, right? Let me go back to Ephesians 4 and just show you this passage right now, because this is so good. Ephesians 4. Paul is talking about the unity of the faith and the unity of knowing the Son of God and maturing to the stature of the fullness of Christ, growing into becoming like Jesus. Then he says, so that we may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine and by human cunning and by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, in other words, the world is full of deceivers, and some of them have come out of the church. The world is full of crafty people, and some of them have come out of the church. The world is full of human cunning. But don't be carried like it's the winds on the waves. Rather, you ready? Speaking the truth in love. We are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part, did you catch that? When each part is working properly, makes the whole body grow so that it builds itself up in love. So you see what he's saying there. Every person in this room has been put in the church for a reason. You've been given certain gifts, certain passions, certain talents, and when you use those gifts and you operate in love and you speak the truth in love and you use those gifts to serve one another, you're helping the body grow up to be more like Christ. So in other words, it's not just the pastor or the teachers who are speaking the truth in love. There is a one anothering that takes place here, right? It's a big responsibility, right? Speaking to one another in love. Not just from here, but from here. And that keeps us, it's like a steadying influence to the ship. When that doesn't happen, the ship is just tossed back and forth on these waves. But when the ship has people who are serving one another and loving one another and speaking the truth to one another, it steadies the ship. So John says, that's why I reminded you, walk in truth, walk in love. But then he offers another element, because this would have been a big question. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. For whoever greets him takes part in his wicked works. What in the world is going on here? So you can imagine in the days of the early church, you can imagine traveling evangelists. You guys maybe have known traveling evangelists, right? They would travel from town to town. And what did they depend on? They depended on the hospitality of believers to bring them into their home, to feed them, while they were in that town, and while they preached, right? So apparently, these false teachers had become evangelists of sorts, and they were traveling from town to town, and people were welcoming them in, and then they were given a foothold into the church, and they were being allowed to speak in the church, and they were speaking lies, right? And he says, if they come to you, and they don't bring the true teaching of Christ, don't let them into your house. Don't show them hospitality. Don't give them a place at the table or give them any greeting. What in the world? You can't even say hi? Oh, hey, there goes a false teacher. Hey, man. Right? No. Go back and look at the greeting in verse 3. Grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ the Father's Son in truth and love. What is that? That's a blessing. A greeting was considered a blessing. In other words, it was a way of saying by greeting he means don't offer your blessing to the lie. don't offer a word of praise, don't rejoice, don't ask for God to bless the work of deceitful people, right? I mean, this is how Jesus set it up to work, right? Do you remember when he first sent the disciples out? He said, look, don't take any extra money, don't take any extra clothes. Just go to a village and just knock on doors until you find somebody who will let you into their house, the person of peace. They'll let you in, they'll feed you, stay in their house till you're through preaching and go on to the next one. That's how it was set up. But if you were a false teacher, it would be very easy to take advantage of the hospitality and goodwill and love of good people. And John says, when you do that, you're basically supporting a wicked work. Okay, let's finish these last two verses. Interesting ending. Though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that our joy may be complete. The children of the elect sister greet you. So he finishes by saying, there's a lot more I could write. I'd rather tell you face to face. Which is an interesting little subpoint here. This is what you miss when you have a pandemic. Face-to-face. I mean, you can see a face on Zoom. You can see a face on the internet. But guess what it's not? It's not incarnation. Right? We're all incarnation. We're all wearing meat. Sorry, that sounds kind of crass, but you, right? People, we have bodies. We have hands to shake. We hug. We fist bump. Right? We see eyes. We see faces. God did not make us to be detached from this. Even Paul said, when I leave this body, I don't want to just be bodiless, floating around. I'm going to get a new one, right? So the incarnation has something to say to us. Now, let's take the last part and then go to the first part. This is kind of an interesting little thing just to ponder about this last part, right? Does this mean when the Mormons and Jehovah's Witness knock on my door, I can't answer? And if I do, am I not allowed to tell them hello? I just answer and stare at them. And whatever I do, I don't let them in. Right? We were joking this week about a family that went here a while ago, and they moved off to another city, and they used to have these little kids, and whenever the doorbell would ring, one of them would yell out, "Be quiet, it's the Mormons!" Right? Right? But that's how the Mormon church is set up. Like, when you see these guys on their bicycles, and now girls, on their bicycles, right, the white shirts, ties, they will have a place to eat that evening. And they will have a home to stay in. It's required that you feed them, right? So if you're a Mormon family, you're going to have missionaries at your table, right? That's how they're supported. And in supporting the missionaries, they support the work. Now, I'm going to leave it up to your conscience to figure out how long you want to talk with them. I mean, I know people who just spend hours in the front yard talking to the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons. And if you feel comfortable with that, go for it. I'm just simply saying, don't bless the work. Because we don't want to see success in a false teaching of any sort. I'm not just talking about people that just knock on your door. We had a family here that also moved away. And he loved talking when the Jehovah's Witnesses came to his door. And one time they came on Thanksgiving. You know, they don't do holidays. Thanksgiving. They knock on the door. And like after an hour, his wife comes out and says, you know, it's Thanksgiving. Maybe you should come in and be with your family, right? Sorry, I just got so wrapped up in it, right? You see the difference. We're not supporting the work. We're not offering a blessing to the work. But again, that's up to you and your conscience. We're just simply saying, don't bless deception, right? Because this is who we are. We are the recipients of truth and love. This is kind of a... Let's think about this for a moment. So I talked at the beginning about your next step. I don't know what your next discipleship step is, but my guess would be it's a truth step and a love step, right? There's somebody out there that needs a truth step and a love step from you who needs your obedience, okay? And maybe even this is like a decision grid of some sort when you're thinking about this in your mind. What's the loving thing? what's the truth thing, what's the honest thing in this moment. So this is a moment of speaking the truth in love. It's a big step. I'm making the first move. That's what love does, right? And we know what happens when we leave one out, right? Ever had anybody speak the truth to you without any love? Yes, you have. It's like the truth hammer down on your head, right? But then sometimes we think, oh, well, I love you too much to tell you the truth. Well, that's more fear, maybe. I don't know. You have to work that out in your heart. But they have to be hand in hand. Otherwise, right, we're taking a step, but we're not sure about the step, and what do I do in this step? Love makes the first move. Love does the act of service, and then love tells the truth. We do keep them both together. I was thinking about two conversations I had this week. I'm at my table. All is right in the world, except I can't drink coffee anymore. Doctor's orders. So I'm sitting there with my tea. It's like a pinkish purple color. It's awful. It's sitting there, and it doesn't have any caffeine or acid, so I'm good. And it's sitting there, and here comes somebody, and they sit down. And it's a long story short. I couldn't sleep last night. I went to my library to find a book, and lo and behold, there was a Bible. So I pulled it off the shelf. I was opening it, and I was thumbing through it. And I was like, where do I start in this? And I remembered, me and you talked one time. You said, like, New Testament, Matthew, and I found Matthew, and I went to bed and started reading Matthew. But when he started reading Matthew, he was very committed not to believing certain things, like those miracles and virgin birth. And No. I'm beyond that, right? I've moved past that. I believe in science, and scientifically those things don't happen. So he was already committed not to believing some of it, right? And there he was. So I'm faced with a dilemma. How is this a love and truth moment? How do I speak the truth in this moment? Do I get into an argument about the virgin birth? How do I do this in a loving way? So in the moment, I just thought, well, let's just keep this focused on his heart and his need for transformation in his heart by the gospel. So I start talking about the Sermon on the Mount a little bit. He tells me this story about when he was in drug rehab. He was in a 12-step group, and his mentor told him, you need to get a book to read. And he started reading the Bible, and he didn't understand it. And he went back to his mentor, and he said, tried to read the Bible, thought it'd be a good place to start. And he said, no, here's what you do. Go down to Barnes & Noble, go to the self-help section, walk into the self-help section, and just pick a book off the shelf, go buy it, and read it. I walked to the self-help section. I looked, and there was a book, and on the spine it said, The Sermon on the Mount. And I thought, oh, that sounds cool. So I picked that book off, and it was written by a Jewish man on the Sermon on the Mount. So I took it home, and I started reading. This is 1980s. He said, I called my mentor, checking in. Did you get a book? Yes, I got a book. What'd you get? Well, it's a Sermon on the Mount by this person. Dead quiet on the phone. You okay? When I had to pick a book all those years ago, when I first started the 12 steps, that's the book I picked. Now, all that story to say, Joey leads us in a song, even when I don't see it, you're working. You never stop working. Listen, when you take a step of truth and love, you can be guaranteed that God got there before you did. And you never know what other believer took a step of truth and love in that person's life before you did. Listen, this isn't all on you, and it isn't all on me, right? So I'm just kind of taking the long view here that if God gives us more time to sit at this table and talk, because every time he comes in, he sits at my table, my goal is to have a few verses in Matthew about the gospel to go, what do you think about this one? What do you think about this one? What do you keep about this one? It seems to be the path of truth and love, but guess what I have to be careful of? Is this love? Is this fear? I have to be careful that he knows that I'm not blessing what is not true. And this is what we all have to deal with. How much untruth am I allowed to sift through and leave sitting there in order to keep the main goal on track? Right? I had another conversation this week. This one will be very brief. is about love. And just kind of explain it to someone, you know, love limits your options in life. Love takes away some freedoms. But love will be the best loss of freedom you've ever experienced. So when you say I love you to one woman and you commit to one woman, you lose the freedom of all those other women out there. You have shut off all the other options. But guess what? You get the joy and the freedom of serving this one woman. And you get the joy of missing out. It'll be the best freedom you've ever experienced. And I've shared the gospel with this guy many, many times and continue to pray. Truth and love would be the footprints I leave behind. So those are two of my stories from the week. Who is it for you? Is it a family member? Is it a friend? Is it a coworker? Is it a neighbor? There's a next step. It's a step where you make the move in love. And then what will the truth be in that step? Let's take a moment and let's have a little quiet and let you think about that. And just ask God to help you take the next step, whatever that might be. Will you pray with me? Lord, I know for some of us, it didn't take any time to think of who that person would be. The person's been on our heart forever. Would you show my brothers and sisters, whoever the person you put in mind, whoever the people are you put in mind, show us, Lord, what love will look like, what it will look like to serve this person, and what it will look like to speak truth in love to this person. Lord, maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it's somebody from school, maybe it's somebody from work. But give us grace to take the next step on the path. And my next step isn't anybody else's, and anybody else's isn't mine. You've given us all the next step. We don't compare. We don't get caught up in all that. So I just pray your blessing on my brothers and sisters here. Father, you are love and you are truth. You put the spirit of truth and love in us. This isn't a power we drum up on our own. This isn't something we have to talk ourselves into and make happen. The strength is yours. The truth is yours. The love is yours. And so we just ask for you to operate in us in that way, Lord. Lord, even as I travel far away to Ohio, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for love and truth, and I'm going to need lots of help. Lord, in this room, we'll travel much closer. Just may your blessing, your power be on us to love. And may we build one another up. May this church be built up as we speak the truth in love to each other. We ask all of this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks, y'all. Have a great week. Take steps of truth and love together.